So excited to have my friend Tracy Kesey back on the show. Tracy has a long and distinguished law enforcement career, starting with the Denver Police Department and ending with the New York City Police Department as the Deputy Commissioner of Equity and Inclusion. Now, currently, she's the Senior Vice President of Social Justice Initiatives for the Center for Policing Equity, because we all want police to get better. Tracy Kesey, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the CJ Evolution Podcast, a top-ranked podcast for you, the criminal justice professional. And the whole purpose is to have amazing guests on the show and content to make you better both personally and professionally. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, keep doing it. Remember, you were honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep doing a fantastic job. You know, here at the podcast, it's such an honor to be partnered with an amazing company like Detecticam. Now, if you've never heard of this company, you need to do some research, because they are keeping the brave men and women who keep us safe every day safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of your hand, detecting illicit drugs, explosives. Now, they have the application that can detect COVID-19. Folks, you need this technology for your agency. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Detecticam. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. Oh, I love coffee, and I know the majority of you do because you're criminal justice professionals. If you love coffee, you're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. They have everything from coffees to elixirs to cocos. My personal favorite is the Lion's Mane Mushroom Coffee. It gives me that extra zip clarity that I need to get me through the day. Now, if you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Detecticam. Click on that link, check out their products, and best of all, you're going to get 15% off at the point of purchase using the promo code CJEVO. Great products and great for you. Enjoy. Folks, if there's one mineral you should be worried about not getting enough of, it's magnesium. Now, magnesium is the body's master mineral, powerful for over 300 critical reactions, including detoxification, fat metabolism, energy, even digestion is influenced by the presence of magnesium. There are two big problems here. First, magnesium has been largely missing from U.S. soil since the 1950s, which explains why it's estimated that up to 80% of the population may be deficient. And most supplements contain only one or two forms of magnesium, when in reality there are at least seven that your body needs and benefits from. Now, the good news is that when you do get all seven forms of magnesium, pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded. From your brain to your sleep, pain and inflammation, it all improves and very fast. That's why I'm so excited about what my friends over at Bioptimizers, the makers of industry-leading digestive supplements, have just created. Their research team recently formulated what I believe is the ultimate magnesium supplement, easily the best I've ever seen or experienced, with all seven forms of this mineral. They even include trace amounts of something called monoatomic magnesium, which helps make all of their other forms more bioavailable. This is by far the most complete magnesium product ever created. And until or unless someone else comes out with a better one, I highly recommend you give it a try. Bioptimizers calls this product Magnesium Breakthrough, and they're running a special promotion for you at www.magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution. You can get an additional 10% off the normal package price with coupon code CJE10. And here's the deal. The guys who make it are so confident that you're going to like it that they'll give all your money back if you don't. With this one simple action, you can reverse magnesium deficiency in all its forms and upgrade to the performance of your body, including how you look and feel, in every possible way. Make sure to go to this special website because it's the only place for you to get access to this amazing discount. This Magnesium Breakthrough promotion is only available while quantities last at www.magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution. That's magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution. You will not be disappointed. On to the show with the one and only Tracy Kesey.
Hello,
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show, Tracy Kesey. Now, she's been on the show a couple times before, and she's very gracious to come back on the show. And if you don't know who Tracy is, she spent just a lifetime in law enforcement. She started out with DPD, left DPD, Denver Police Department, as a captain, went off to the big city in New York City, where she was the deputy commissioner of training, and she retired as a deputy commissioner of equity and inclusion. And now she is a senior vice president for the Center of Policing, or for Policing Equity. Tracy, are you there?
I am so here. How are you?
Oh, I'm just doing great. And I'm so honored to have you back on the show. We've known each other for a couple of years now.
And
I'm so glad. I know you're extremely busy. We're going to get into that. But thank you for being here, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. And same to you as well.
Oh, thank you.
You did your time. I mean, that's honor that.
Well, you know, we were talking a little bit. You'll get into some of the stuff we're seeing and issues we're seeing in law enforcement now. But I always ask, and I'm going to ask you again for people who haven't heard of the old shows with you on and previous shows, and they'll be linked up in the show notes so you can listen to Tracy. What made you get into law enforcement? What was the catalyst?
Wow. I had that question just today, matter of fact. I don't know what it is. I know everybody's probably contemplating right now. There's a lot of self-reflection going like, why am I doing this job? I would tell you that I was looking for a job, right? So I don't come from a policing family. Mm-hmm. We come from a family of service providers. Mother was a nurse. Father was in the military. And so I was a single parent at the time, and I was looking. This tells you how old I am. Remember when jobs used to be in the back of the newspaper, you know, the Denver Post. They used to call them want ads, I think.
Yeah.
And, really needed to find something that was considered, you know, growing up in a family like that, that's considered stable. And typically that means it has, you know, good benefits and, you know, and some room for movement. And I applied for actually three departments, Denver, Houston PD, and Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't giving it much, you know, too depth of thought. It was just this will be a good job. And, you know, my dad was the same way. He's like, it's a good career. Of course, spoken as a true military man, it's like, this is good. It'll give you structure, right? You know, you've had that conversation before.
Oh, yeah.
It'll give you structure. And so, you know, I did that. And I chose, of course, Denver because it was home and I'd grown up there. And so it made sense to stay home and stay close to home where I had support and family. And so I would say, you know, it wasn't any one or two things, but coming from a family of service providers, it was, you know, not out of the question.
It's in your blood.
Not out of the question, right? So, you know, those, and we have a lot of folks who do that. They're not, you know, just police, military, and, you know, nurses and doctors and all those folks who do the service jobs. And it was, you know, it was, for me, it was a good experience. There was a lot of negotiating around, you know, gender and race for me.
Sure.
Because at the time there were folks there who did not believe I belonged there.
Yeah.
And so there was that, but I would say, you know, I figured out a way to make it work, and it worked for me. So I have and I always tell people, and I told this when I was, you know, in my PD, if it was not for Denver that raised me, I would not have been there.
Yeah.
And so I have to, you know, pay much respects to that experience as well. Yeah.
Now, what I got to ask, so, I mean, going from Denver Police Department, which is a fairly, 1,300 cops or something like that, 1,400?
Yeah, around there, 1,400, yeah.
So, you know, to go to NYPD, which I think, 30-something thousand cops, you know, NYPD, largest municipal agency, I believe, in the country, right?
Yeah, it
the
is.
The world. But, I mean, that must have been like just a shock to go from. And I think we've talked about this before, the last time we were on the show. Just, I mean, now you have just tens and thousands of police officers. I mean, how was that experience?
Well, I think that where people seem to get nervous, and this, of course, people who've, you know, worked in mid-size and large departments with most of the, you know, countries made up of the same size, those similar size departments. Mm-hmm. And I think what folks sort of threw people is the scale, right? So it's large, you know, academy classes. And I think you and I talked about this, you know, typical academy size classes is, you know, like 30 people. And, you know, with NYPD every quarter, we're hiring 500.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, if you think about this, and this is one thing I will say is true, and I work with a lot of police departments throughout the country, the only difference between NYPD, other than its rich history and its culture and tradition, is just that. Mm-hmm. It's rich history, it's tradition, it's culture, but cops are cops. Mm-hmm. If it's New York, if it's Denver, Westminster, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think that was the beauty of it. And I think that is why I enjoyed that transition so well, because mm-hmm. we do speak the same language. We might have different sort of, you know, things that represent it, but we can pretty much pick up a conversation anywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And so that was always a thrill. And of course, like most police departments, the dedication of the folks that are there. I mean, and the legacies and the, you know, the long histories behind some of the names and family and the models that have come out, right? You know, mm-hmm. Comstat, we talked about that. And and just, you know, the proud, and most, you know, all of the police departments are very proud of where they've come from and where they're going. And so that was just, it was a very unique experience. And living in New York, of course, was probably one of my favorite parts of being there. But it's just a wonderful group of people.
Yeah, I remember when we were,
you know, working hard.
When we were talking before, I think about a year ago, or when you were still with NYPD, I remember you were, because your husband just retired from Denver Police Department, and my hands off. Thank you for his service.
Absolutely.
But I remember you were
years.
you were traveling back and forth from Denver to New York City, and now.
Yeah. It's almost equating to shift work, right?
Yeah.
It's like, please don't work the morning shift, but back and forth, you know, 4-hour flights. But.
Now, did you face some of the, you said, you know, you face, you know, a lot of adversity in Denver PD, being a female African-American woman. Did you face that when you were in NYPD that much? I mean, it seems more diverse. Is it a more diverse department? Or
it's a very diverse department, but there's still some of that there.
Sure.
And school. I think it's not just necessarily old school either, but I think
just archaic way of thinking that, you know.
You get that in many places, right? So it's not just law enforcement. You get it in that way. And I think that what is always interesting about when you enter those kind of spaces, you know, I like to think I have a very keen sense of self-awareness.
Oh yeah.
And it really is one about making sure that when you're engaging something, and this is something that, you know, officers of color do a lot, is to make sure that whatever you're experiencing is what you believe you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And we have to negotiate that, and we have to, you know, do a couple of things to make sure that we are not identifying or misidentifying something. And so, but I've always been really sort of straightforward and candid, so I'm not one to say, you know, I think this is what's happening. I usually just engage and figure out what's going on.
Well, smart, and like you said, you're very smart. You have that, you know, that, I mean, it's, you know, that sense of when, and a lot of people don't have that.
And there you go. That's it. A lot of people do not.
Yeah, they
that,
don't.
That sense of anything.
Yeah.
And it often gets them tripped up and gets them into trouble.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say the one thing that most people do, and I like to do it as well, is that you really do try to give people the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Because you never know what's going on, you know, personally, or what's happened, or what the experience has been. And so, you know, I always truly try to take that approach. And then there's some people who are just, you know, asses, and you just deal with that.
Yeah.
So, but it was never so overwhelming. But what you notice with most departments, and you notice it more depending on where you are, is that, you know, times are changing.
Yeah.
And so is the way that we talk to one another and approach one another and do all of those things. So.
Yeah.
But it's still one of the best times. That's a career thing.
Yeah.
It's like, never would have been able to do that.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit before we started about, you know, again, you spent just so many years in law enforcement. Have you, and we talked about the mood and the environment out there, Tracy. And I like to think, maybe I'm just naive, but I'd like to think that the majority of people out there support our brave men and women out, you know, in uniform. But have you ever seen a time and you know, that where it's been, it seems like, you know, this bad where you were seeing people out there calling for the death of police officers, or we're seeing officers getting assaulted every day? I mean, have you ever seen a time like this since, you know, you've been alive?
Well, I haven't personally.
Yeah,
I've been alive, right?
Well, I know with the history, you know, I know the country's gone through just tremendous times of strife. I get that. But I just don't, as from my 51 years on this planet, you know, 25 of them being in law enforcement, you know, 24, 25, I don't think I've ever seen this sort of, I don't know, animosity.
No, I haven't seen it. Not to this level, but I can tell you the conversations that I have with my mother, who will be 80 in December. She clearly remembers it.
Yeah,
she remembers. And so I think a lot of people think that, you know, it's not recent history. Mm. I mean, it's not ancient history, but it is recent history for a lot of folks, or at least in their lifetime and their lifespan. And I think that what's been really hard for me is that I really find myself sort of interpreting what community members are going through with officers. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that came up, I mean, and it's not just this moment, this time, right, where officers are demoralized, they are, you know, confused, clearly get it, understand it, been there, especially when you spend a lot of time and you know that you do, as individuals, do the right thing and do that on a daily basis. But what the community is really talking about is, and this is sometimes hard for officers to understand, mm-hmm. is that it's not necessarily the officer today. And I say that not necessarily because, you know, we have folks who do bad things, who wear this uniform.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But when you talk about a collective history of events that feel as if nothing has changed, mm-hmm. when you're being told that you've got community policing and you've got all these other things going on, and you have generational experiences like what we are seeing and what might certainly have been described to me, this is what is happening. And I'll say specifically because I'm connected to the Black community. The Black mm-hmm. community is not saying they don't want policing. And I know what people may hear or what people may want to focus on, but we've got folks who are always doing or saying things because they believe it.
Yeah.
You know, but majority, not all, but most. What they're saying is that the form in which they are receiving that service in their community is not equitable, mm-hmm. and it's delivered in a very different way than their counterparts in some of the other affluent neighborhoods. And it's those collective experiences, those ongoing experiences of what we're seeing in video and what we're seeing on TV is what's brought us to this point today. Mm-hmm. And part of it is historical as well. So I'm not going to, you know, discount that.
Oh, sure.
And what the officers have a really hard time understanding, not all, I would say, have a really hard time understanding. And what they'll tell you is like, well, I didn't do slavery. I'm not responsible. And the answer is absolutely correct. Which you also have to understand is what the history of that uniform has done mm-hmm. to a specific community. And when acts continue to happen, it is if it has not ever changed, or there's never been any movement or any type of improvement. And you have to be able to understand from someone else's lived experience about what is happening right now. Mm-hmm. And what we try to do is measure it from, you know, where we stand, and those of us who've been in the officers for a long time know the work that we've done as individuals and know the work that some of our partners have done. But we also have been around people that we know, and we question, why are they in this uniform and why are they wearing this badge? And the community is asking the same questions about yeah. accountability. And, you know, and I had a colleague I was talking to from the UK who asked a question that was very interesting to me. And he said, well, I thought that there was, you know, and I think we all were saying this, I thought there was due process and, you know, you've got officers getting fired and, you know, you have some chiefs getting fired. And I explained to him, I said, yeah, that's correct. There is due process, there's supposed to be. And I said, and I'm sure that's going to be an issue. Coming up down the line. But when the community saw this, the community then also got the message, well, you told us that there was due process, but yet you seem to be able to, you know, to enact whatever you're going to do, whether it's terminate or suspend or whatever, mm-hmm. and it didn't appear to be a problem. And so now you've got these messages that, you know, we've been saying for decades, and I know as long as I've been around, that there's a process we have to go through, and we have to see that process through. Mm-hmm. Yet over the last couple of months, we watched officers get fired, and we watched chiefs get fired. And it sends really complicated messages.
Yeah.
And I think that what we're going to be going through over the next, you know, I know for me, next couple of years, maybe, and even beyond this, is just that. What is it you want the police to do? Bottom line.
Yeah, and I think it's like we were saying it. Yeah, and that's a great question, because I think a lot of agencies from Chicago, NYPD to everywhere are asking the same thing. What do you want to do? And I agree with you, Tracy. I think a lot of you know, communities want law enforcement, and you know, I that's such a great point that you brought up is, what is law enforcement supposed to be doing right now? What's the direction? And yeah, I mean, it's just so hard. And that's where let's kind of talk about what you're doing with, you know, the Center for Policing Equity. I mean, what kind of, where do officers or where do police departments need to improve? And I guess that's probably a huge question. I mean, I'm sure there's this, question. I mean, that's a huge question, but what are the pressing areas where law enforcement, because I think, and I've said this from the beginning, I think we need reform. We need to change a lot of our ways. But what do we need to be doing? Because I think it's a collaborative effort too. It just can't be law enforcement. The community has to be at the table too. So what are some areas that we need to really, really work on right now?
Well, I'll tell you one that's probably just universal, and then I'll talk to you about how do we get to that point, right? Mm-hmm. So one of them is what we do for accountability and how we hold people accountable. And so I'll give you one, just probably one sort of prevailing example that is really hard for the community to really wrap their minds around. There's more than just this one, but this is probably the sort of straight portion of this. It is really hard for the community and even myself to fathom that when you have an officer who's been known to depart from the truth or swear out a false affidavit for an arrest warrant, and they are still employed, it is very hard to explain that to a community member. Mm-hmm. So if you have the inability to be trusted at your word as a police officer, how do you continue to be a police officer?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's probably, I mean, there's many, but that's probably, that's one of the main ones. And so the question that you asked me is like, well, what should we be doing? And here's the interesting part. Each community is very different, and it should be treated as such. And part of what has to happen, and what's happening, I should say, not just has to happen, what is happening, is that those conversations are happening right now. So they're happening in a couple of ways. So, right, so the Center for Policing Equity, what we do, and Phil Goff and I co-founded this about 12 years ago. And what we do is we help police departments and community members, legislators and council, understand through data, and we always say, you know, science through, you know, justice and science will help you get to where you need to be. And so we help them look at their data, and we help them look at not just policing data, but data, you know, we call it administrative data throughout organizations and, you know, other areas like housing and employment that impact what we do for a living. We look at those spaces where there are disparities. And when we say disparities, and this is what a lot of folks, and I'll put my doctor hat on, this is where a lot of folks get sort of hung up. Disparities is not the same thing as racialized policing. And when people hear disparities, they automatically think, well, you're calling me a racist. And it's like, here's what disparities mean. Disparities mean there's a difference. There means there is something different about the data that is pointing to a problem, all things being equal. And so what we do is we help the chiefs look at those problems. So the data becomes the pointer. And when you do that, that means you have to look at a couple of things, right? So it's not just the officers, it's the policies, it's what you're asking them to do, it is what you're asking them to enforce, it's what 911 calls, you know, bring them there. And so part of the process that folks are going through now that we're leading on is go through your, it's very easy, go through your 911 calls, just do a quick swatch, and you and I both know this. How many of those calls that you receive are truly calls about criminal activity?
Oh, geez. I mean, I can't tell you.
That's right. Right. And so, right. And that is, that's the first blush.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not hard. You and I both know we can do that in a shift and tell you how many calls we really had.
Yeah.
And when you realize how many calls we respond to that are not or should not be in our purview, that's where you start. And mm-hmm. you start with trying to understand. So, you know, we have been default for services for so many years, right? So this is where you get the conversation about mental health. Well, the solution to mental health, and again, not that it's a bad thing, and I've been CIT trained, I think you have been as well. Mm-hmm. It's not that that's a bad, you know, program or it doesn't have its benefits, but when you really pull back what's happening here, you have a system that has failed. And the question becomes one of, why hasn't there been an investment in that system?
Mm-hmm.
Because what the community is asking for, they're not asking for someone to come in a uniform and a weapon to make an arrest. They're asking for someone to come who can help them get help.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And we've sort of like taken on that cape mantle too, right? So we got this because we fix stuff. We know we do.
Yeah.
As soon as somebody says, hey, you know, what can we do? You put five captains in a room and they come up with a 60-page plan, you know, just to just go over that. You know, speaking from experience, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, but the question the community is asking us right now is, should you be doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to a lot of this stuff is no.
Yeah, I agree.
We shouldn't. And so that's what we do. And CPE really spends a lot of time, much like you and I are doing right now, having those conversations, helping chiefs understand, really impressing upon the chiefs that they have to have internal conversations. The cops are confused. They're not clear about what they're being asked to do, and they need clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have clarity right now, what typically happens is they just, you know, they just let things not go. They'll go to their 911 calls, but the self-initiated activity is not going to be there.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's questions, and that's not a bad thing. And people like to read into it. Well, you know, that means there's less problems. In some cases, yes. But it also begins to disconnect you from your community when
yeah.
you do that. And so, you know, the work that we do with, you know, with departments and community, and I, you know, and I'm going to say, and with unions too, because I know people have been, you know, trying to hold up that piece as far as, you know, unions being, you know, blockers. Some of them are, and then some of them are very cooperative. Some mm-hmm. of them want to be a part of the solution. But you can't begin to, you know, push people out of conversations because you don't like to hear what they have to say.
No.
And as we yeah. sit with chiefs and we sit with community, it may not be immediately, but at some point you are going to have to engage with the police department and have the conversation mm-hmm. about what the ask is. So that's what of course I do. And of course you can imagine what it's been like the last 3 months.
Oh, geez.
And it is one of which right now what policing should be doing is just that, is some self-reflective work. Go in, look at what you're doing, ask yourself, should we be doing it? And if not, who should? And then the community, and you mentioned this, and part of the community's responsibility to this as well, is the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We work at the consent of the community. And our focus and what should be happening and what the needs are, the community needs to be at the center of that. And that also means the community does have really good ideas about what they should have and what they shouldn't have, you know, what they shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of this too, when you look at the communities most affected, they are also the ones that have been least invested in.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that is not that decision, you know, to where to invest does not rest with the police.
Yeah.
It does not. And so it is this sort of uncoupling of a lot of different things that we're trying to help people walk through. What I really get concerned about is when we have, you know, legislation and ordinances that are just flying off the shelf. And you know, folks, I understand the need to respond, but we also have to have the need to make sure that what we're responding to or what we're going to deliver to respond to is going to have the desired effect.
Yeah.
And not be symbolic. And I think that's, you know, part of my, you know, exhaustion has been around that conversation as well. I get it. I get wanting to, you know, try to resolve this, but this moment in time we're going through right now,
it's going to take
as uncomfortable as it is, we're going to have to go through it.
Yeah. And it's going to take a
yeah.
long time.
It's going to take some time.
It's not going to happen overnight.
It's not. No. Oh my gosh. No, it's not. And you got to manage expectations of the cops. You got to manage the expectations of community and as well as of legislators and council people. Mm-hmm. And I know the urge to provide a response right away. I get all of that, but you have to really ask yourself, is this the most appropriate response? And if so, is it done in a way in which people understand how it works, what it is going to do or not going to do? And some of them, because the CPE is across the United States, and as we watched councils and states sort of pass these things, and we began to ask, you can do all of these things, but who's determining whether or not they're working, they're effective, right? And a big part of what we do is we measure things. It's like, well, what are you collecting to know, that this isn't happening anymore? And that you would have to ask that question if people were really thoroughly thinking through all the things that you need, all the component parts you need to make sure that new legislation or whatever people are trying to do is going to be effective. So it's been a really interesting 3 months.
And I like what you said about, I think sometimes in society, I think there's a knee-jerk reaction just to, okay, let's get something out there. Let's pass something. It's an ordinance now or whatever. It's a statute. And I'm not saying that with everything, but I think, I think we need to be careful that we just don't throw stuff out there. It has to be well thought out. It has to be a collaborative effort, right?
Yeah. And it's not, the other part of it too, is that it's not necessarily what the community is asking. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of what you see, first of all, for most people who don't know, that I'm a woman of color. And I think that what people don't understand is what was happening right after Floyd was what we call a collective grieving. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever had a loss or if you've ever lost anyone, but a lot of things are done in that moment. And a lot of things are said in that moment. And a lot of things are happening right now in this particular moment in which we are going to have to, we will be coming back again probably several times to ask the same questions and to try to make sure that we are doing what we should be doing for community. But it's hard. It's hard for everybody. And I think people forget we're in the middle of a pandemic. People are unemployed. Soon people are to be homeless if they don't have jobs and can't pay rent. Yeah. I mean, we are just in a space right now, and not everybody, let me be clear. I'm the first one to own up to my privilege, where I live and the space that I have, but a lot of people aren't here.
Yeah.
They're not here. And we have to remind ourselves sometimes people are not here, not everybody. And not everybody's having the same lived experience right now.
Yeah. And what really, and well said, Tracy. And what really, you mentioned George Floyd, and going back to what you said before about, the community wanting to know why some of these problem officers were still employed. Derek Chauvin, guy who killed George Floyd, he was one of those officers that was repeatedly in trouble, and it, like you said, why was this guy still employed is beyond me.
Mm-hmm. And those are the questions that have been asked. This isn't the first time somebody's asked that question, right? But it is that moment, right, where we should be able to say either this is why, or, we need to go back to the table and figure out, why did that happen? I think there's some of that now. Mm-hmm. But I think that we also, sometimes I think we forget that, one, we know the job is hard, and so does the community. But that is not a reason not to want to make sure that people who don't belong here don't stay here.
Sure.
And so, and I think most, and I always say this, most of us get that. Most of us really do get it. And I think that what is going to be interesting to watch, and you and I really talked about this, right? We're going to have to watch and see. We were already having problems recruiting before this started.
Oh, yeah.
There's this push now, yet again, to have diverse departments. If you don't think it's going to have an impact on your ability to get recruits of color, I don't know where you've been for the last 3 months, but it is. And so it is one of those things, and you asked me, you said, is this a good profession? And I said, yeah, it's a good profession. And yes, it's a good profession. Are we going through a tough time right now? Yeah, but we weren't the only generation that went through a tough time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so it's really how we decide to come to the table on this and what we want it to look like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and some people, and, you know, we talked about New York and folks retiring. I get it, you know, and not every generation can make the shift, and not every generation is going to like what the new one or the next one's doing. And I always use the example we do, you know, we had, you know, when we came on, people were still using revolvers, and we went to automatics, and they were like, this is the end of the end, right? You don't know how to shoot. If you can't get it in 7, you shouldn't be here. I mean, the whole thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not as light as that, but it is. But we know each generation has its challenges. And so this is one of these moments where, yeah, policing is going to be different. It's going to be really different.
Mm-hmm.
At what cost? We don't know yet. Hopefully not the cost of lives of officers and more community members.
Yeah.
But we know that we're going to have to work through it together in order for us to get to where we need to be. So it's going to be really interesting.
Now, what do you think about the you know, defund the police? As you know, Tracy, I think NYPD just got rid of $1 billion. I think they got a $6 billion budget. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think they just reallocated or got rid of $1 billion. I mean, won't that invariably affect recruitment?
Well, I mean, it's going to affect a lot of things. So let's talk first about this, the whole thing around defund, dismantle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
There's all different types of things on a spectrum, depending on where you sit. But let me tell you what I'm for. I'm for efficiencies.
I am too.
And I've been around a long time to know that there are things here that we just do because we do. And there are things that we should never have been doing.
Yeah.
And we start with that. And that's what most of the community is asking for.
Yeah.
Not all. Let me be clear, because there are some people who want to defund and dismantle, and that's their right to have that. But when I talk about what the work that we do at CPE, we are about efficiencies, and we are also about investing in those communities that have not been invested in. And so when we sit with the chiefs and we walk them through, and I can, you know, we can do another show on the difference between defund and incrementalism and all those other things and what the end goals are. And they all are supported in perspectives, which is important to listen to and understand. And when I talk about this and when I talk about it with chiefs, it's really about go in and look at the efficiencies. And the challenge right now is budgets were going to be cut anyway because of COVID, right? So there was already a budget challenge, and now there's even more going to be placed on law enforcement to be even more efficient and to look at what you do and whether or not those things need to be done. Granted, you also have to look at, you know, what are the legal implications. And a lot of folks, some folks have consent decrees and you know, judges' orders where you can't make any moves and things like that. Those have to be worked through. But for the most part, most agencies can look at efficiencies and go in and say, yeah, we don't really need to be doing this anymore. But even with that, right, so even if you make those identifications, and this is where we tell community, you really need to understand how organizations work. Specifically police organizations, you need to learn how the city budget works. So you have a really sort of good sense or informed sense of what the ask is. But what's interesting about it is even if we removed cops from responding to mental health calls, who's going to respond?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that, you also have to think about, it's not just the who, it's do you have enough? And what's that process going to look like? And how do people access that new service?
Yeah.
So there's lots of things that you have to think about in doing and shifting and making sure that you are being as efficient as you can. So that's the other part. The other part is the broader country's orientation around policing, right? The first three numbers you learned when you were little were 911.
911.
Right? 911. And you remember when the kids were babies and so the cops started going
happens,
like, what?
911.
Yeah, that's right. They learned it. They pushed it to see it. And so one of the things that you also have to do when you're talking about the efficiencies of police, you also have to look at what the community uses us for. right? What they think we should be doing is often filtered through 911. And some cities have gone to 311 to try to offset some of that, right? So, you know, cars stuck in the middle of the road, you don't call 911, it's 311, call someone else. But you also have to, you have to orient, and you're going to have to retrain a country around what that looks like. And it doesn't mean, you know, never call the police. And we say this all the time, you know, we get to a call and we're like, why are we here?
Exactly.
You know, why are we here? And that's what we're talking about, you know, really get to those tight efficiencies, making sure that the investments are placed where they are needed in those communities that need it most. And that's going to be a process. It is going to be a process.
Well, yeah, and you made just such a compelling, just very, very, you know, you just made a compelling point about defund the police, and it all centered around efficiencies. But I think the problem with some people that when they see defund the police, they don't hear the very educational point you just made about it. And I agree with you, Tracy. I think when you get on social, all you just see is a sign about defund the police, but there's not a response. Thank God you're going around the country and educating people on this, because it is efficiency. And I agree. There is stuff that we do in law enforcement we don't need to be doing.
No.
And we can free up that, you know, that money, funds, whatever you want to call it, and point it towards other places. But
that's right.
You're the first person I've talked to that, you know, and I know it's about efficiency, but you're the first person that's come on that said, yes, and this is what we don't need to be doing things that we've been doing anymore. And you brought up a good point, mental health, you know, and maybe we need to still respond from a safety standpoint. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
that those are the things you work through. But that's what you work through with the community. That's what that's
But that has been on
saying.
The back of law enforcement for a long time now. Where
that's
we
right.
are
and
responding.
A new one.
Oh, yes.
A new one is social distancing.
Yes.
Right? Why in the world?
Why are we?
Would I send you to tell somebody to put on a mask? It makes, I mean, what happened to the public health people? It's like, you know, it's what happened to, you know, public health inspectors.
Well, you know,
boxes of masks.
Tracy, you've been in law enforcement long enough. You
know
that whatever somebody wasn't want to do, whatever department, or they're going to dump on law enforcement.
And that's what's happened. And that's part of what we're looking at now. But the other part of this too, so it's not just, you know, we react to sound bites now. Mm-hmm. Right. And this
exactly.
is the same conversation I had before. You know, there are people who talk about, you know, dismantling the police department. And, you know, however you feel about that, and, you know, people feel all different kinds of ways. But, you know, what we have lost the ability to do is to sit down and listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
One of the things I always like about coming on your show is it's always, you know, we don't listen well. Cops used to don't listen really well anyway, unless there's something going on. You know, we like to try to provide an answer for everything, or this is why it has to be this way, but we don't listen well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen, you have to listen to what my grandmother used to say, with the whole ear,
mm-hmm.
right? There's going to be people who are going to say things, and they have the right to say them. And there are other people who are going to say things, and if you give them some time to talk through and listen what they are trying to get to, a lot of times you have some common ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been really interesting, you know, over the last 3 months to, you know, if you don't understand why people are saying defund the police, and, you know, you can say, well, it's activists, they don't get what we do, they don't understand what we do. Most of them do. They absolutely do. It's been the experience for some, lived experience, of how they've encountered us.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're in pain, the first thing you want to happen is to make the pain stop. And if you think policing is the center of your pain, that's the first thing you want to have stop. And again, it doesn't mean, and we, you know, always leaves room for interpretation, but it doesn't mean for some, that means that we should have no police. For some, it does mean that.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand that perspective.
Yeah.
You understand that perspective. And so one of the things that we find that's really been interesting, you know, around, you know, this, the whole movement, and this is the same conversation when we talk about Black Lives Matter. Now, you and I have had this conversation
mm-hmm.
before. And as a Black woman, I can tell you that for me, when I have to have conversations with my grandson, who will be 10, and the conversation feels as if, why do I have to have this conversation with him? And we just did. We just did, and it hurt. It hurt.
Yeah.
And that the question is, well, why would somebody not like me because of the way that I look? And so, you know, hard conversation for his mother. His grandparents are retired law enforcement.
Yeah.
And the whole premise behind Black Lives Matter is just that. We have value. We matter. Mm-hmm. And I had to tell that to my grandson.
Yeah.
You matter. And so it is, again, you know, we listen in sound bites. Get it? You can, you know, you can do all those things that you want and then some.
Yeah.
But for me, and as a Black officer, this is that space that I often always had to be in, and having to decide between two communities. No one else has to do that. No one has to say, well, you're, you know, either you're all blue or, you know, you're there. And it's like, oh, nobody else has to make that choice. And I've refused to make that choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly will always take the time to have these types of conversations. People are going to think what they want to think. I can't help them with that. You know, we've always known that. But in order for us to think about where we're going to be in 3 to 5 years, if we don't start listening to each other, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
I don't know about you, but I've got retirement property somewhere in the woods. So I'm good.
Well, but I mean, you make a great point.
It's one of those things. I mean, we're going to have to start listening. We just don't want to listen.
My grandmother used to say there's a reason why you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. You're supposed to be listening twice as much as you speak.
That's right.
And I agree with you. I mean, it just seems like we live in a, you know, we live in a world right now. And again, not everybody, but it seems like, you know, you can't have a conversation without people yelling and screaming at each other.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can't, and that's not going anywhere.
And it's not, I mean, how do you come together, you know, and try to work on the problems that this country has, unless you're listening and looking at the other side and coming together and try to find some solutions.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. And yeah. I think that, it's a great question, right? It's how do you do that? And it's, you do that by stop talking for a few minutes,
mm-hmm.
right? And listening. And it's uncomfortable. And I know a lot of folks are uncomfortable in this moment, but this moment's not going away anytime soon. And so you learn how to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. But you also begin to learn to educate yourself, to listen. Everything doesn't require a response. And sometimes it's really just about, you know, take a minute, hear what folks are saying. And, you know, what you believe after that or what you think is right or wrong is certainly a personal choice and personal decision. But folks want to be heard. And you can't hear people who are yelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think it's doable. I think it's absolutely going to happen. I just think that people have to get through what they're going through.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, your grandmother has seen a lot in her lifetime, and she's seen periods in time that it was difficult, but we always come through as a nation. We come together and we'll get through it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have faith in it, dude. At least for my grandson, I'm going to make sure we do.
Tracy, that's why I admire you, because, you know, you have that attitude and, you know, I mean, you have to have that attitude. You cannot live in doom and gloom and, you know, nothing's ever going to get better. I mean, if you have that mindset, I mean, how do you expect things to get better? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And I also understand, too, how easy it is to get into there. You know, folks are tired. And I had to explain this to community members. You know, unless you stood on a skirmish line for 12 hours and had to work 40 hours overtime in a week, and then you're trying to do childcare, and you might have sick parents, or you might have, you know, other issues going on, it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot, and it's a lot, you know, from a community perspective as well, to feel that you can't walk down the street of your own neighborhood without being stopped. And so we have these perspectives, and those perspectives need to be heard and learned, and we can't force it. I mean, the interesting thing I think today in one of my calls is that you could hear it. You know, they want to make somebody trust them. I'm like, I hate to be dating you. How do you do that? Make you trust me.
Tell us how that works.
Yes, exactly. It's like you can't make somebody like you, right? And I think that's something we're going to have to. Yes, right. That's right. And that's where we're at right now. And it's tough, but, you know, we'll come out on the other side. I have faith in the fact that, you know, we'll get there.
Well, it's like we talked about before, Tracy. I mean, the people that refuse to change, refuse to learn, refuse to listen, especially people in law enforcement, they're going to get, hopefully they're going to leave the profession, or they're going to get canned or whatever, but they don't need to be there.
Yeah, it's difficult, and change is hard. And, you know, we're the worst group of all. But you have to evolve, and what does it look like, and what does it mean? And the interesting part, and cops all over the world have been doing this right now, and they're asking themselves, man, is this still the job for me?
Yeah.
And that's an okay question.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. But my thing is, I've talked to so many cops. I'm like, look, do not walk out in anger and thinking you're doing some kind of counter protest. That's not what this is about. And I know it feels that way. And I know, it doesn't feel as if there's support. There's tremendous amount of support.
Yeah.
There is. But you can support someone and not condone bad behavior. These are not mutually exclusive, and you don't have to choose one or the other.
Yeah.
And that's where we're at right now. And so, but again, I always tell people, say, we'll get there. Doesn't feel like it, but we will. And our big thing, and I know you've always mentioned this too, is really around self-care. I get concerned. We had a Chicago commander, chief, was it the day before yesterday?
Yeah.
Committed suicide.
Suicide. I saw that. Yeah.
Brand
new. Self-care. Recently promoted.
Just recently promoted. And the self-care piece, we can't just reiterate how important it is for cops to take care of themselves and to be healthy and to try to get some exercise and some sleep and all that stuff. And it's very important. And that's the stuff we used to make fun of, take that nap, for what did we say? We got a lot of folks now, a lot of departments do that yoga class, do that meditation, do what you need to do. But self-care is really becoming critical right now and important.
And I don't believe, like we just started out, Tracy, talking, I really do believe that the majority of people out there, I don't care what background they come from, support law enforcement. And I think the problem is, I think just cops turn on the news and they see all this stuff going on and they say, well, everybody hates me. And I don't believe that is the case. I think the majority of people out there support law enforcement. And like you said, so eloquently, we'll get past this. We'll become stronger and more resilient.
And I think so. And I think that at least, until I retire for a third time, that's my charge.
Well, Tracy Kesey, if thank you so much for coming on. If people want to reach out to you, where can they find you?
Oh, sure. You know me. You can reach out to me at kesey@policingequity.org.
Yeah.
And you can go to the website, policingequity.org, and you can reach me through there as well. And I always get wonderful emails and lots of conversations with street cops, detectives, retirees. So I always appreciate it. And as I've told large groups of people, there is no stupid question.
Yeah.
And there is no question that is going to be offensive. It's a matter of making sure that you have good understanding about what you think is happening or what should be happening. So.
Yes. Well, Tracy Kesey, thank you so much for coming on the show, your honorable service.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
In law enforcement, your great work with CPE, Center for Policing Equity. That's going to be linked up in the show notes. Tracy, I want to have you back on. There's so much we can talk about.
Always, always. Let's get down the road and see where we are, because we like to look back and say, well, we didn't see that one coming. So absolutely. It's always a pleasure.
Tracy, take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.